Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to the Joe and Joe Weather Show. And starting off tonight, this is the other side of the Notley Dam near where I am. We had so much rain that the water actually went over the top. They opened it up, and we've got this gorgeous waterfall and spillway that goes right into the Notley River. And I thought I'd share that with everybody tonight. When it rains down here, folks, it really does rain. The Joe and Joe Weather Show brought to you by Omni True Value Hardware. They've got mulch and everything else you need to get your yard in tip-top shape. 1226 North Wellwood Avenue in West Babylon, 631-756-1125 for the best prices in town and the best prices in the tri-state area. OmniTrueValue.com is the website. All right, let me shut that gnat sound off here. Hang on one second. And there you go. I don't know if you got to take a look at that there, but it was pretty nice, actually. It's like I was walking along the park. It was sort of like being in Niagara Falls, sort of.
Say, I have an idea. Instead of, you get yourself a rowboat, maybe put a little mast with a sail on it, and you could charge people. You could be your own little personal maid. Or actually, they already have a maid of the mist.
So maid of the mist, yes.
Butler. Or a butler.
Butler of butler the brook. Oh, yeah. The rain finally stopped here after 2 days. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know what the totals were up here. But just judging from how heavy it was raining. Yeah, Monday and particularly yesterday had to get at least 3 or 4 inches of rain. All the rivers were up at their highest levels, and it was nicer today. We had leftover clouds, some sun, temperatures in the 60s. It was very comfortable with a nice breeze. You, on the other hand, and from northern New Jersey and points north and east, it was doom and gloom all day long. South and west of there, actually, temperatures got into the 70s in South Jersey, southern Pennsylvania, and point southward, but because they had west winds there. You were sitting in that northeast wind all day. Just miserable, just absolutely miserable.
58 degrees up here, Joe. Cloud-filled skies, I think, from about 11 o'clock this morning to about 4 o'clock this afternoon. A steady, light to occasionally moderate rain. You could not have asked for. You know, you associate the month of May with a lovely, period of weather. I mean, it's not too hot, it's not too cool. Today, though, it was too cool and too wet, and it was more or less just a miserable kind of day. And we are hoping for better things to come for tomorrow.
Yeah, the pattern is just overall is going to favor cooler than normal temperatures into next week. Tomorrow, we've been touting that as the nicest day of the week, which this week is not exactly a huge accomplishment, anything better than today. But it's nice to see, at least across much of the U.S. now, that the severe weather events of the last few days, that has relaxed. You know, there's still some leftover risk this evening along the East Coast, but most of that is marginal risk and not seeing too much activity from that standpoint. Now it's just a matter of getting these clouds out of the way. I'll bring up the satellite loop, and still loaded, but it is moving along, and we should clear out. But you can already see up back through the western Great Lakes. And out of the northern plains is another short wave that is swinging eastward. And you can also see the leftovers of the front that's down in the southeast and blowing up some thunderstorms in South Georgia, northern Florida. Now, this is going to complicate, this weather front's going to complicate the weather for Friday and Saturday, along with everything that's going on upstream coming down out of Canada. This is something you want to see if you're a winter weather lover. You'd love to see an upper air like this in December and January and February. But yeah, when you get into May, it's can we just get this out of here?
And you know, it's what I've been saying for a good number of days and a good number of weeks now, Joe, and that is to try to forecast much beyond, let's say, three or four days is it's gotten ridiculous. I had spoken to somebody on Friday of last week, that's less than a week ago, and I was talking to him about the upcoming week in terms of weather, and I said, you know, there's a fair chance there could be a nor'easter here for Friday into the following first day of the second weekend of May on Saturday. And then I said, well, at least hopefully it'll be moving on out in time for Mother's Day on Sunday. What happened? There's no nor'easter. Or if there is a nor'easter, it's going to be a coastal system that is going to be very limited in its extent. We're looking more at a system coming in from the north and west to bring. And this is the crazy thing. Friday, at least from my point of view, Joe, Friday could be a mostly dry day. We may not get any rain or precipitation until after dark.
The day side should be dry Friday. There's no question. And because of how complex the upper air is, the problem, you know, certainly from a standpoint of forecasting, there's so many little short waves that are running around and particularly with this northern stream getting involved, some of those short wave, you know, the one that's going to be off the east coast gets amplified after it goes by, but then you've got these other ones that are dropping southeastward that basically complicate things for Saturday. Now we were talking yesterday how we had to throw in maybe the chance of some lingering showers scattered around on Saturday, and I think that still holds. And of course, as soon as that exits, you've got the next system that is going to be coming out of the southwest. And that is going to bring clouds and maybe some rain. Now you're trying to figure out the timing on this. Maybe Sunday during the day, the day side, most of it's dry, and you can hold off the rain till late afternoon. Now we're back to late afternoon into Sunday night. It's been very difficult to stay ahead of the game with everything that's been going on.
Just so many short waves, that is.
Yes.
To deal with in the in the coming next, not just next few days, over the next week or maybe even couple of weeks, they just keep coming, one after another after another.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. We know how difficult it is for the models, the supercomputers, to stay on top or stay abreast of things when they're moving so quickly during the winter season. And now you would expect as we move into the spring and summer, things would slow up a little bit. But as it turns out, this upper air pattern, everything is changing. Everything is flipping very quickly, and that's making for a tough go for the computers to try to put a relatively decent forecast out, much beyond again 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, trying to stay ahead of it has been very difficult. Now I've got the UCAR radar. I was able to. They were having trouble today. There was some kind of data outage there, so. A lot of the radars were missing. I just happened to pull up the Upton radar, and I just refreshed it. So the rain is just about gone. There's still a couple of leftover showers. Looks like there's one last band that is moving across New York City at the moment, mostly light stuff, and moving on out. That'll move on out to the east. So that should really be the last of it, and we are still also seeing, you know, some leftover rains in parts of New England. Much of that has pulled out. Let me see if I can get the U.S. because the U.S. picture was not available for a while. And it still isn't. You can see here, there's nothing on it. There are no echoes. So I'm not 100% sure how, you know, what the issue is. So you know what? Let's go to Tornado HQ. We can at least look at the radars there and take a look at. There's only 4 severe thunderstorm warnings that are active at the moment. That's a plus. And you can see on their radar view, I'll try to get a little bit tighter. We could just kind of move around here. Here's what's left in the northeast up in New Hampshire. Still some heavy downpours. Maybe there might be even a thunderstorm in the mix moving across the New York state line into the Vermont side. And there's rain extending up into Maine. There were some thunderstorms in scattered around in parts of Pennsylvania, central PA, south central PA. Those are gone. Looks like there's a little cell northeast of Richmond and one cluster offshore of the Delmarva Peninsula, some scattered activity in interior North Carolina. Otherwise, really, there's not a whole lot happening. There's some action down in Florida, a few special marine warnings, but otherwise it's just scattered activity there off the coast of Louisiana. And we've got some action in parts of south central Kansas, right along the Oklahoma state line. Two severe thunderstorm warnings working there, and some scattered showers and possible thunderstorms up in eastern Nebraska, scattered through Iowa, southern Minnesota, also in the western Dakotas, and down into northeastern Colorado. So overall, it's really quieted down. The Storm Prediction Center has a small, and I mean small, leftover marginal risk, and that's going to be gone because the radar showing that everything's already moved out to the east from southern New Jersey down to the Virginia, North Carolina state line. So that's pretty much over with. Otherwise, general thunderstorms indicated down through the southeast and into Florida. There's also a marginal risk working this evening in parts of Kansas, western Oklahoma, eastern Colorado, small portion of southeastern Nebraska. And over the next couple of days, starting with tomorrow, which is Thursday, we are looking at a small area of marginal risk in southern Missouri, northern Arkansas, northwest Tennessee, western Kentucky, southwest Indiana, southern Illinois, and also marginal risk up and down the east, the eastern half of Florida. And that is for Thursday into Friday morning, Friday into Saturday morning. We have also an area of marginal risk, a small one in northwest Texas, southwest Kansas, the Oklahoma Panhandle, and southeastern Colorado. And on the day 4 to 8 outlook, they do have something on day 4. And they had it yesterday. On day 4, they have indicated a 15%, so that's a slight risk chance in eastern Kansas, eastern half of Kansas, western Missouri, and northeastern Oklahoma. And the rest of the time is predictability too low for the remaining period. So from the standpoint of severe weather, at least that angle of it calms down over the next couple of days. There's certainly not going to be any severe weather here in the Northeast or down into the Mid-Atlantic states, probably into the weekend.
And what was that on the extended, the 4 to 8? Was that, that's day 4. Okay, so that's Saturday. That's the day before.
Right.
Mother's Day. So
correct.
Moms don't have to worry about their day. Unless you happen to live in the area that is 15% on Saturday, that you get something, and then Mother's Day turned out to be cleanup day, but that's we don't have to worry about that where we are. So
nope. WPC on the rainfall next 7 days. Not a whole lot in the Northeast, basically under a half inch, and in a lot of areas under a quarter. So that would take into account whatever we get Friday night, Saturday, which is going to be, Saturday's just going to be scattered stuff, and then Sunday night into Monday morning. Inch and a half or more across the lower Ohio and middle Mississippi Valley, down into the central, down into the lower Mississippi Valley and some of the Gulf states. Also, that extends a half an inch to an inch, extending northwestward up the western plains into eastern Montana. A little bit of action up in the Pacific Northwest, but not a lot. And the Southwest remains dry. So nothing really here that stands out as far as rainfall is concerned. Doug Wetzel, thanks for hitting Super Chat tonight. Most appreciated. Thank you so much, and good to see you on the chat board as well. Now, I preloaded, Joseph, I preloaded the upper air. And, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking January, February, and not May. But, I mean, the amplitude here on this trough goes all the way down to, you've got the last height line across southern Florida there over the Keys. We do have this sharp trough, this negatively tilted trough on Friday to the west, and that's going to spark a low offshore and send it northeastward. And you'll notice by the time we get to Saturday morning, there's a wrapped up cutoff in the Gulf of Maine. But the problem here is And it's a big problem for the Northeast and into the Mid-Atlantic states. You've got another strong upper low sitting just west of James Bay, and there's a short wave that's running in central PA down into North Carolina, and there's of course a short wave that's rotating around that upper low to the northwest. I mean, it'd be one thing if you had the whole trough already by you, but because you've got these sort of disjointed pieces running around, it's going to create a very cold atmosphere aloft on Saturday and a little energy there to trigger off some showers. And then, of course, what happens is, it finally does wind up pulling out. But then you see that upper low that's dropping down into Idaho and Montana. Well, a piece of that starts to swing eastward, and it's hard to pick out, but it's in there. And that's what potentially brings some rain up to maybe as far north as southern New England. I think this may wind up sliding more to the south than anything else because the flow is kind of flattish. And then that whole upper trough just kind of swings around from Monday into Tuesday. This to me looks like we could actually, the upside here is that at least the first half of next week and maybe into the second half of next week will be dry.
It would be nice. By the way, I did a little bit of research, and today, as I mentioned the last couple of days, today at 2:34, we hit the halfway point or the midpoint of the current spring season. And just if you're interested in this, at Central Park, from March the 20th until now, I'm not including what has happened today, because when I did this compilation, the statistics were not completely and officially in. But as far as, believe it or not, as far as the spring, the first half of spring at Central Park is concerned, it's averaged 4.5 degrees above normal. In terms of rainfall, it has averaged a half an inch below normal. And if you say to yourself, well, how is it possible that it was 4.5 degrees above normal? The last 11 days of March were, if you could think back, were exceptionally warm. The normal for those last 11 days in March at Central Park is 45.6 degrees. That's the average or the mean of those final days of March. We averaged in this year 54.9 degrees. We were about 9.3 degrees above normal for those final 11 days of March. And that's what bumped the averages, or bumped what we have seen so far in the first half of spring up so high to 4.5 degrees above normal. Take away those 11 days, and it would probably have only have been like a degree or so above normal. April was a little above normal. And of course, we now have the first 4 days of May, which have averaged, believe it or not, above normal as well. So if you want to believe it, Joe, for the first half of spring at Central Park now, milder than normal and also a bit drier than normal. Well, that's kind of difficult looking out the window, or if you stepped outside today, because it was anything but dry and mild out there this afternoon.
Yeah, it'll astound a lot of people, because most people will, you know, just kind of characterize this as cold all the way through. And yeah, they're pretty forgetful. Fully one quarter, 11 days out of 45 is a quarter of your data there. So yeah, you can't, I understand when you say when you take out those 11 days, but you also can't really take out those 11 days because they're part of all of this. We haven't had, the one thing we haven't had this time, this spring, I mean, we've had these gloom and doom days, but you can go back and look at springs where these gloom and doom days, you get 4 or 5 days in a row where temperatures are in the 40s and 50s. And we haven't really had that. We've had, you know, a couple of times where we've had 2 days, but we haven't, and you usually wind up with multiple stretches. We really haven't seen that. We've seen a couple of days here, a couple of days there. You know, there's sort of been this mix going on. Hasn't been anything too consistent. But now, of course, when it doesn't get much above the mid-50s and your average high is getting close to 70, if it isn't already, I don't even remember. What is the average high now? Is it close to 70? Getting close to, or just over or just under?
I don't have it for Central Park. I can tell you that here in the Hudson Valley. For White Plains, for example, the average high temperature for this time of the year is about 68 degrees. So probably it's around 70 for Central Park.
Okay. So running through the, is this the latest GFS? Did I put the 18Z? Yes, I do. So there's your low for tonight in the Gulf of Maine. Gets a little breezy tonight into tomorrow morning, but nothing that we can't handle, of course. And then we are going to have a nice day. Now, again, because of the orientation of how the upper low in Canada and the shortwave, the negatively tilted trough, you've got this arc of rain that develops from Lake Ontario and Lake Erie down into western Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, and into Virginia. There's your low sitting near Wilmington, North Carolina, Friday morning. That low goes out to the east, but then you still got to deal with this upper trough. And there's this band of rain, Joe, Friday evening. And I think, as you say, for most of the area, from the day side, Friday should be dry. There's rain into southern New Jersey and in eastern Pennsylvania from that western, the upper trough to the west. And that lingers around. It kind of doesn't really move very much during the overnight. It just sort of pivots northeastward. And in fact, the GFS even goes to the dark blue snow in northeast PA and up near Binghamton.
Yeah.
Come Saturday morning. That's how cold aloft it is. And there is some intensity being indicated by the echoes, by the radar reflection here on the GFS. So you wonder whether in those higher elevations there in northeast PA and west of, you know, in and around Binghamton, where there could be some wet snow or some grapple in the mix, that hangs around all day on Saturday because you got a big storm there sitting south of Nova Scotia. It doesn't really move very much. So this is our issue for Saturday. It's going to be that leftover arm from the upper trough that's going to be sitting around and triggering off some scattered showers. And then, of course, once that pulls out, that allows this next low, and take a look at this low, drops down from Wyoming into Colorado and Kansas and starts to push eastward with rain. This is at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon. The rain is the leading edge of it, southern New Jersey to about Erie in Pennsylvania, if you want to draw a line. And of course, it's raining in Ohio, West Virginia, back through Indiana, northern Illinois, and Iowa. And then the low pushes east. Rain at the doorstep of New York City by Monday evening. And then it comes in Monday night, moves away, still waiting for the low to go by. There's some more rain or showers during the day Monday. Then that goes out. And then finally, we see some improvement here. Doesn't look like there's anything following it up. So that means that maybe Tuesday and Wednesday. Then on Thursday, you got another low coming out of Texas and running up into Kentucky. And it's got precip here by Thursday afternoon. And Thursday night into Friday morning, some kind of developing low southeast of Atlantic City with heavy rain over New Jersey, Long Island, southern New England. We'll see if that's still there come tomorrow when we look at all of this. But bottom line is there are no really big changes in the overall pattern. And by the way, the models are still generating the possibility of some snow in Colorado and southeastern Wyoming on Sunday night into Monday morning, and even still lingering into early Tuesday morning, during the day Tuesday, if that's correct. So that'll be interesting to see if that plays out.
It's a little unusual even out there to see snowflakes this late in the season, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's unusual for us, but, you know, it's... You know, you're right. I mean, at this point in the season, at this point in the year, you just want to say, enough already. We're done. Don't come back until October or November. You know, that's...
You want it to just go away, is what you want it to do. I'm just going to, while we have this up here, give me a moment. I'm going to see, just my curiosity is being piqued right now. I want to check the status of the NAO. And in fact, I mean, take a look at this, Joe, that since around April 20th or so, actually since earlier than that, the NAO went negative, right around after the first week of April, had a brief flirt to the neutral line around the 17th, 18th. And now it's been sitting negative since. And when you look at the forecast out for the next 2 weeks, except for one or two members that just, you know, want to peek it over the neutral line, the vast majority of ensemble members of the GFS have the NAO, you know, that for this time of year, that's a strong negative signal right into the middle part of the month. So that's not going to be conducive to any kind of prolonged warm-up.
No, it's not. And in fact, I'm looking at my, you know, I put together each day a forecast for the Hudson Valley. And from Thursday through next Wednesday, 4 out of those 7 days, I would rank as unseasonably cool. I'm talking about where temperatures are at least 6 degrees or more below normal. And that's basically the story for 4 out of the next 7 days. And as far as the entire slate is concerned, from tomorrow through next Wednesday, all of those days are below normal in one way, shape, or form, but maybe by a degree or two or three. But again, 4 out of those 7 are at least 6 or more below normal. I'm looking at Saturday, Joe.
That's a lot calling for this a high time temperature. Of year.
I'm calling for a high on Saturday, average high now for the Hudson Valley of 56. Now, normally, as I noted a few moments ago, the normal high is about 68. So if that comes into play, we're looking at a day on Saturday that's 12 degrees below normal with more clouds than any sun and scattered showers. It looks like Saturday could very much turn out to be a day kind of similar to what we went through today, which was disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to also bring up the Pacific North America Index here. And that is that's actually some slightly positive going into the weekend. Which explains the deep trough in the east and the ridge, you know, the ridge out in the west, and then just kind of straddles the neutral line. Although you got some members slightly positive, a couple of members actually strongly negative, but the vast majority of them are either right along or just south of the neutral line. So you're not getting any help here, because if you want, you know, if you get a deep negative PNA signal here, that at least would try to push a ridge up into the eastern part of the United States. Maybe a little bit of that happens late in the forecast period. But as far as the short and medium range, ain't going to fly. Just not going to happen. So we're just going to have to endure this until eventually all patterns break down. And by the way, a couple of people, you know, messaged me about this and, you know, trying to make an argument that this is something that's going to carry through for the whole summer. I don't know what the answer is to that question, but it's highly unlikely that you're going to see, you know, a pattern for the summer lock in at this very moment. But I will also say, on the other hand, because in weather there's always another hand. But on the other hand, we just spent a winter where the NAO, the North Atlantic Oscillation, showing higher than normal pressures in the North Atlantic, being in the negative on the negative side of zero for the vast majority of the time. I mean, much of that time in December and January, we were blocking, especially in January, we were blocking Pacific air, so we didn't get any help from the East Pacific until February for 4 weeks, but. The NAO has been, you know, there's the long term here, going back to the December, has been for the NAO to stay negative much of the time. So the trend is your friend. We're just going to have to see if that if there's something out there that could come along and break this multi-month pattern that the NAO has been locked in to.
It's crazy. Now I have a piece of information that was in our local newspaper, LoHUD.com, which is a division of Gannett USA Today, about some interesting stat concerning the overall temperature here that you may find interesting, Joe. America's new normal temperature is 1 degree hotter, and this is Fahrenheit, 1 degree hotter than it was just 2 decades ago. Scientists have long talked about climate change, hotter temperatures, changes in rain, and more extreme weather being the new normal. Well, data released yesterday, Tuesday, by NOAA indicates that there are now hard figures on this cliche. The new U.S. normal is not just hotter, but wetter in the eastern and central parts of the nation and drier in the west than just a decade ago. Meteorologists calculate climate normals on 30 years of data to limit the random swings of daily weather. It's a standard set by the World Meteorological Organization. Every 10 years, NOAA updates normals for the country as a whole, for the states and for cities by year, month, and season. And for the entire nation, the yearly normal temperature is now 53.3 degrees Fahrenheit, based upon weather station data from 1991 to 2020, nearly half a degree warmer than it was a decade ago. 20 years ago, the normal was 52.3 degrees, based upon data from 1971 to 2000. So the average U.S. temperature for the 20th century was 52 degrees. The new normal annual U.S. temperature is 1.7 degrees hotter than the first normal calculated from 1901 to 1930. Almost every place in the U.S. has warmed from 1981 to 2010 normal to the 1991-2020 normal, said Michael Pilecki, NOAA's Normals Project Manager. So we are 1 degree warmer now than we were just 20 years ago in the U.S., believe it or not.
And I'll just pull 2 points because I only know this for sure. But if you look at New York City's statistics in this latest round, and also if you look at Philadelphia's statistics in this latest round, the average snowfall for the winters for both those points has gone up while this warming has gone on. You can make the argument that, well, that's because if it's warmer, warmer air holds more moisture, and if you know, which means that, you know, when you do get snowfalls, they tend to be more than what they used to be. I will say this: we certainly know that, and this is a fact, at least for New York City anyway, and for surrounding areas, that the number of 20-inch plus snowstorms in the last 20 years has gone way up. You've had more in those last 20 years than you probably had in the prior 70 or 80 years. So it is, you know, again, I'm only pulling out 2 points here, and I only know, you know, my surrounding area, the immediate surrounding area around New York City and Long Island in particular. So I'm kind of doing some of that off the top of my head. But it's kind of interesting that you've had, I'd be curious to see what the, taking a bunch of different places in and around the Great Lakes, for example, with regards to lake effect. And by the way, I saw somewhere, I forgot to mention this, but Redfield, New York, which is, you know, basically the snow capital of the United States, they had 160 inches for the season? I remember reading this. I remember the number was 100-something. Well, that's just for argument's sake. Was like, I think for some reason 160 is sticking into my head. They had 160 inches for the season. It was the fourth least snowiest winter up there. Okay, the fourth least snowiest. So, I mean, that is kind of remarkable. I would just be curious to see those snow numbers in and around the Great Lakes. Have the warmer temperatures produced bigger lake effect events, keeping the lakes unfrozen perhaps for a few extra days than they otherwise would be. But, you know, that's good. That would take somebody to actually would have to sit down and really go through a lot of data to see that. And speaking of snow, by the way, because Johnny Quest pointed out, because they got snow in the forecast for him, and he's up at, you know, on the top of a mountain there in northwestern Virginia. But yeah, with that big cold upper low coming, you know, with the upper low and that really, really cold air aloft, you're getting some precip that's going to get generated in the instability. Why not? They got freeze warning and they have snow in their forecast. And Chuck Cardillo I hope he didn't put his snow shovel away if the GFS is right with that stick of snow. And Johnny Quest would like to know if you could explain heating and cooling degree days.
You know, the late Tex Antoine, who was on NBC for many years and then later moved to Channel 7 WABC here in New York, in his nightly run of the statistics, the highs, the low, the records, he always mentioned degree days. And sometimes he would say not just degree days, but fuel consumption units. When you talk about heating degree days in the wintertime, the magic number, well, it's also the same for cooling degree days. The magic number was 65. You would take the high and the low for the day, let's say in the wintertime, let's say it was your high was 40 degrees, your low was 20. The average was what? 30. So you take 30 and subtract it from 65, and what do you get? You get 35. That's 35 heating degree days, fuel consumption units. And at the end of the winter season, eventually you end up with maybe 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 heating degree days. And if you do that for a number of years, you can see the higher up or the more heating degree days you accumulate, the colder it was for that particular winter season. And if you do it on a weekly or a monthly basis, and if you're a fuel oil company, you'll be able to tabulate using those numbers, those fuel consumption units, how much to charge for oil or for natural gas. In the summertime, it goes the other way. Let's say you have a high of 90 and a low of 70, then you end up with an average of 80, and you would subtract 65 from that 80 degree temperature, and what would you get? You would get 15, so that would be the number of cooling degree days that you would have, and again, depending upon the number of how many cooling degree days you've amassed during the summer season, will tell you how much perhaps electricity that you consumed during the summer season to run your fan or run your air conditioning system. For whatever reason, we rarely ever hear that today. Again, Tex Antoine was the only one who spoke of degree days in his forecast. It might be well if some of the TV guys who are on right now might add cooling degree days or heating degree days to their statistics when they report the high and the low temperature. But that's what basically it is, a cooling degree day or a heating degree day. The magic number in both cases is 65, and you would either subtract that from the mean high temperature during the summertime, or you would subtract the average temperature of the winter season from that 65 to get a heating degree day or a cooling degree day. And that's basically what degree days are.
Okay, just to switch it around, because Johnny Quest did send me this the other day, and Robert Brown has says it seems as though there are more hailstorm events with huge pieces of hail, some of them bigger than a man's hand. And he asks, if there's some, he described them, Robert's on the chat board described them as the gorilla hail. And, I was talking with Johnny the other day, we were discussing about, because the question came up about what kind of an updraft do you need to get a hail of a certain certain size. And actually, it turned out that you and I guessed 100 miles an hour for an updraft to get grapefruit-size hail, and it turns out it's 98. But he sent me a chart that breaks it down. What kind of updraft, in other words, the winds ahead of the thunderstorm lifting up, okay, as opposed to the downdraft on the backside blowing down. So the updraft, remember, the hailstone has to get heavy enough to fall against that force pushing it upward. So for a just a couple of examples here, for dime size hail, you need an updraft of 38 miles an hour. For a golf ball, you need 64 miles an hour. For a baseball, you need 81 miles an hour. A grapefruit is 98. And a softball size hail, you need an updraft of 103 miles an hour. I mean, that those are, really formidable numbers that you're looking at. Now, as to the question of whether if there's been an unusual number of hail events, I think, I don't know what the stats are from SPC. They do have stats in there. I'll have to go dig around and see what I can find. I think the fact that we live in a world now where, because this stuff used to happen all the time, but you never really heard about it until, you know, the advent of the 24-hour news cycle, and of course with social media and everything else, and Instagram, and who could, you know, take a selfie with the biggest hailstone, and all the, and so on. So I don't know whether we're getting more hail events in that part of the country. From my experience, I would probably guess that it's nothing extraordinary as far as the number of events that are occurring. You need a really good solid shortwave. You need troughing out in the west. We've been seeing that with these storms that have been resulting in snows in Colorado during the month of April, and now, of course, going into May. There have been some rather impressive severe weather setups that have gone on in the Gulf states. There haven't been too many of them in the Great Plains, and that's where you usually would see some of the bigger hail events. But they have also been setting up in the Southern Plains in Texas. I'm guessing off the top of my head that we're not seeing anything extraordinary. But I would have to go, you know, you have to look at SBC in their archive section to see, and their climo section to see, you know, what their numbers are in terms of seasonal hail events. So that answers all those questions.
During my time at News 12.
Are you still with me? Uh-oh. Oh, taking an internet hit.
There's a little over 2 inches. So about 2 inches for the largest that I could ever remember here in the Hudson Valley. The biggest hailstone ever recorded was, I think, in Vivian, South Dakota, where it was 8 inches in diameter. 8 inches in diameter, Joe. I mean, you didn't want to be outside when you had hailstones that big coming down from the sky. That's amazing.
No, you certainly don't. We just took a minor internet hit, in case you lost us there for about 5 or 10 seconds, but we were back. Whatever it was, it fixed itself. So, you know, the beauty of technology. So let's go to Briller Jeopardy. Scott Briller has been doing a great job working on these lists, Mr. Rayo. So we have today's list. Now, I keep thinking that we should have, you know, because a lot of this to me feels like Bob Barker announcing the 10 semifinalists in the Miss Universe contest, or in this case, the Miss USA pageant. So let's shoot for today's 10 semifinalists. And here we go. So according to NOAA, these 10 states produce the most lightning strikes. These 10 states produce the most lightning strikes.
Okay. All right. I will take my first swing here and immediately go with the so-called Sunshine State, Florida.
And Florida is, you have just called out the first semifinalist. Yes. Florida is number 5.
Only number 5.
Miss Florida is wearing
me. I would have thought it was
Miss Florida is wearing a striking gold lamé evening gown from Vera Wang. they would be dressed in their like their state, whatever it is, like New York State would be, you know, Miss Liberty and anyhow.
Let me ask you a question. You just mentioned Bob Barker on the Miss USA pageant. Who was Bob Barker's co-host on all of those pageants? Do you remember?
Yeah, well, there were two of them. June Lockhart was co-host for a number of years, and then they dumped her.
Right.
And I don't know if they dumped her or she left. and then it was Helen O'Connell.
Helen O'Connell. That's who I was thinking of.
Yes.
All right. Who would dump Timmy's mother?
Or Will Robinson's mother.
Or Mrs. Robinson.
She had great hair.
Mrs. Robinson was somebody completely.
She had fabulous hair in season three. I don't know how they could have made it any higher.
What did they call that? That was the beehive, right?
The beehive. Let me see if I can find a shot. June Lockhart.
I'm looking at June. I'm trying to find her here. But she's still alive, by the way. I think she's like 97 years old.
Yeah,
now.
97. And in one of the famous of the three Christmas Carol movies, she's in the one with Reginald Owen, and she's in there with her parents, Jean Lockhart, and her mom, I believe Kathleen Lockhart, played I can't believe I'm having a blank here. The parents there, the name. Oh, I'm having a moment.
What do you mean, the parents?
Jean Lockhart played the person who worked for Scrooge. What's the name?
Cratchit.
Bob Cratchit. Right? Yes.
Bob Cratchit.
So Jean Lockhart played one of the kids, and Jean Lockhart played Bob Cratchit, and Kathleen Lockhart played Mrs. Cratchit. Isn't that? That's kind of cool. So let's see. I'm trying to see if they got shot here of June Lockhart with big hair.
I was looking myself, and I didn't find the big hair. I found her with like low hair. I guess during the Lassie series, she had like regular hair or whatever.
Right. No, I'm just taking it.
But on Lost in Space, it was like up here.
Yeah, most of these shots were from. Most of the shots here are from season two, but not from season three. But you get the idea. Okay, so we got Florida in there. We fooled around long enough. Okay, so go ahead.
All right.
So Florida is number.
Right. I would have thought Florida was going to be up near the top, number two or three or whatever. Now I think now just because of its sheer
size. Size matters here.
Five. Right. It, as it always does, just for sheer size, as you just said, size matters. I'm gonna pick Texas. I'm gonna make the assumption Texas is probably all the way up at the top, just because again it's a big state.
Texas is number one.
Number one on the list.
Yes.
It's like Family Feud.
Correct.
All right, Joe, and Texas is number one on the list. All right. Since it's so famous for spawning tornadoes in The Wizard of Oz. How about Kansas?
Number two is Kansas.
All right. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to pick the states somewhere between Kansas and Texas and Florida, somewhere in that zone for the most lightning strikes.
Yes.
That's what we're going for, most lightning. Mm-hmm. So how about your old home state, Louisiana? Is it on the
list?
Sadly,
Louisiana is not a semifinalist.
Strike one.
Right. So, but she could she could be Miss Congeniality.
But what are you saying? It could be number 11 then, right? Or
well, it's possible.
Well, now what am I going to do? I was going to say Alabama and Mississippi, but if Louisiana is not among them, what's north? How about your state, Georgia? Is that on the list?
No, it is not on the
Strike
list.
Strike two. So maybe what I'm doing, Joe, it would be crazy if I were to say New York, but I'm not going to say New York. Maybe a more northern state. What possibly could be, in terms of most lightning strikes? Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma?
Oklahoma is number four. Number four is Oklahoma.
Okay. All right. So, how about Mutual of Omaha, Nebraska?
Nebraska is number three.
Number three.
Okay, so there
All right.
are.
So now
so we now have five, the five semifinalists. There are five remaining semifinalists.
So they're standing there in their evening.
And by the way, just so you know,
to be called.
By the way, just so you know, the five semifinalists that you picked are Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Florida, and they are ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So now you've got to get the. Not only do you have to get the remaining five semifinalists, but they are on the bottom half of the draw, which makes it harder. And you've got two strikes at the moment, so you cannot miss any of these.
So how about the one that's your favorite and maybe mine? The land of enchantment, New Mexico.
Number 10. New Mexico is number 10.
See, now I'm in a quandary. I'm in a quandary because in July and August, they have the monsoon season in New Mexico and also Arizona. And I would say right now, I would say Arizona, but then I'm saying to myself, well, is it possible that Arizona is not on the list? That they may not get as many thunderstorms as New Mexico does, and that's the quant. So I'm going to stay away from Arizona for the moment. And I said, what did I say? I said Texas and Oklahoma, Nebraska.
Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Florida, and New Mexico.
Right. I'm trying to figure out. You know. Well, the Mets yesterday were canceled. They were playing in St. Louis because of lightning and thunder. So how about Missouri? Is Missouri on the list?
Number six.
Number six.
Is Missouri.
Missouri. All right.
So
Missouri.
You now have three remaining semifinalists, and they are ranked 7, 8, and 9.
I don't know. What could I possibly? I'm trying to think of some place that's. Did I mention Wyoming?
You did not mention Wyoming.
Did I mention Colorado? I didn't mention
you
Colorado.
You did not mention
either.
Colorado.
See, now I don't know what to do. I don't know if it's. I want to mention Arizona, and I want to mention either Wyoming or Colorado.
All right.
But
okay.
I don't know.
All right, I'll tell you this. I will tell you this.
Colorado.
One of those two.
Wait a minute.
Wait. One of those two states. Hold on. You mentioned Colorado. You mentioned Wyoming.
Right.
One of those two states is on the list. One of those two states is not on the list.
I would say let me phone a friend, but I just heard from the intercom lady, and the intercom lady said Colorado.
All right. So
maybe so I should go with Colorado, because if I don't follow with the executive producer, I'm going to be in trouble tonight.
Well, especially if it turns out that you picked Wyoming and you're wrong, she's going to kill
yes.
you. If you pick Colorado and you're wrong, she's still going to kill you anyway.
She said.
Yeah, I know, but she's still pissed off. She's still pissed off about the glass from yesterday. So, either way, you're
2 days ago.
Right, 2 days. Well, even more. She's still mad for 2 days. You're deadbeat no matter what you do. But I need a. What is your final pick there? Wyoming or Colorado?
If I'm smart, I'll pick Colorado. So I'm picking Colorado.
Colorado is number 9 on the list. So you not only know that Colorado is on the list, you know that Wyoming is not. Okay? So you have two states left here. Two states left.
All right. All right. And I see on the chat board, my wife says, ha ha. Two states left. So should I go with Arizona? I'm going to say Arizona.
Nope. You're out.
Strike three!
Okay. So
all right.
Here are the two states you did not guess. And they're neighboring states, too.
Alfred Phillips says Texarkana. Yeah.
Okay, so what is north of Missouri?
What is north of Missouri? Iowa?
Iowa.
Not Iowa.
Okay.
You're kidding me. Iowa's on the list?
Yes. And its neighboring state is one of its neighboring states, Nebraska, I believe, touches the border of Iowa. But this other state touches the border of Iowa, and that is South Dakota.
Yeah, but I could have also said Minnesota.
Right, but you didn't. Either way, you would have been wrong.
It's true.
South Dakota. So those were the two you didn't get, 7 and 8. South All Dakota right. and Iowa. Alex Pisaki, you're asking me, I have no idea what the forecast is for Washington, D.C. for the summer. And I don't really do zip code forecasting here. So you have to go on my subscription site to kind of get the zip code forecast, or at least help with your zone. You'll have probably a typical hot humid Washington, D.C. summer, where the air doesn't move for 3 months.
You know, I think I mentioned this before, but our old friend Norm Dvoskin, you know his definition of capital punishment? Capital punishment, according to Norm, is spending the summer in Washington, D.C. without an air conditioner.
Oh.
Capital punishment.
There's no wind there. The air just sits. You're too far inland to get any kind of sea breeze. And there's no reason for a wind in the summertime because the gradients are always usually on the weak side. So, yeah, it just sits there. And of course, it sits there in a city with buildings. It does get stifling in Washington, D.C. So that's it. That was fun.
Yes, it was.
So we will.
I think.
Right.
Now you learned something.
Yeah.
You learned something. I would have thought. I would have thought the places or the states with the greatest amount of lightning strikes would have been along the Gulf Coast or the Southland, and it turns out that's not the case. So we learned that you had to go into the Great Plains and the Rockies to get that type of
I am also condition. Learning. I'm also learning that some states make a lot of lists.
Well, yeah.
Some states make a lot of these lists. Colorado yes. seems to pop up on every list we've done so far.
And land of enchantment.
And the land of enchantment. Exactly. New Mexico. Yes. All right. So we'll see we're going to eventually run out of top tens. We'll see what we can figure for the next time around. The chairman just hitting super chat. Thank you so much. Oh, you have a bonus question. I didn't even see the bonus question. Hold on. Let me bring it back up. There was a bonus question.
Oh, is this where I could possibly win a fur coat from Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills?
Oh, okay. So so here's a little twist. The bonus question, I was supposed to ask you this first. Then if you'd have gotten it right, you would have gotten an extra strike. But then you would have picked Arizona anyway, and it wouldn't have mattered. So what is the highest and lowest temperature in New York City Central Park during the month of May?
Ah, ouch. The highest and lowest temperature. I know that the temperature has gone as high as 93. I don't know if it's gone any higher than that.
I've told this story about the highest temperature in the month of May, if you may remember.
This is the one where it actually hit 100?
It hit 101.
They said 101 and they it ended up being 99.
It's 99 in the record books, but in reality, it was actually 101. But 99 right. is the official high, and the weather observer that day got to go home alive. Let's put it that way.
and the And the lowest, I think it's actually hit the freezing mark at least once in the month of May. So I'll say 32.
Yes, 32. 99 and 32. I'm sorry, I forgot about that, but I was supposed to ask you that first, so you would have gotten an extra strike. You could have gotten a strike four. Your third strike instead would have been a foul ball.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Craig Carlberg says the highest was 98 and the lowest was 31. Oh, well, that's his guess, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 99. Yeah, and then the story was on that day, the actual forecast that day was for a high of 70. And every time the forecast, the temperature busted up 5 degrees higher, the forecaster on duty had to send out a new forecast. And in those days, when you sent out a new forecast, it took like two or three hours to disseminate it through the, you know, the antique teletypes that they had, because it all had to be typed by hand. Anyway, it went to 85, 90, 95. And then when the thermometer broke 100, the forecaster went to the weather observer and just basically said, put down 99. Put down 99. You're not putting 101. You're putting down 99.
Put down that. Put down that.
Yes, put down that. Exactly. All right. So that's it for tonight. Went over an hour. Nice long show. So we'll see you guys. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7:30 Eastern time. And, we're also on schedule to do our Sunday morning show, by the way, at 11 o'clock Eastern time, Sunday morning. I don't have any conflicts this weekend. And, I'm thinking you don't have any conflicts this weekend that you've told me about. So, we're on schedule, for this week.
We're on schedule and we'll be here on Sunday morning.
Although, you know, deep down inside, I do want to cancel tomorrow night's show just to get Mr. Reuben Fairchild all worked up. But I'm going to be big about this. We'll do a show tomorrow night. All right, folks. It was good. We'll see you tomorrow. And have a great evening. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
Oh, wait. I forgot. One more thing.
What?
One more thing. I don't know how I could have forgotten this, Joe. The Joe and Joe Weather Show is brought to you by OmniTrue Value Hardware, Long Island's mulch capital. They make mulch there. They never run out. And they've got the best prices in town. They beat the big box stores. Just bring your dump truck and their front loader will take care of you. 1226 North Wellwood Avenue in West Babylon, New York, in southwest Suffolk County on Long Island. The telephone number is 631-756-1125, and the website is omnitruevalue.com. And also brought to you by Wholesale Holiday Lighting by Giannini at 162 Ocean Avenue in Lindenhurst, just blocks away from OmniTrue Value Hardware, your complete holiday lighting specialist, meeting all your decorating needs. Their phone number is 631-957-5106, whether you want to decorate your house or maybe you want to do this as a business. Come the holiday season, give them a call, 631-957-5106. LIHolidayLighting.com is the website. Now we can say goodnight.
Are we done now?
Yes, now we're done.
Are we done?
Yes, we're okay. Done. Say goodnight, Joe.
All right. Good night, Joe.
Good night, Joe. Good night, everybody.